wait a second. Okay, hang on. Well, wait a sec. I want to explore this with Bob a little bit because he's wrong. So I want to challenge him a bit on this. Okay, folks, welcome to another edition of the No Mind Podcast. I'm Mitch Maxine. Comments or questions to my personal Facebook page, the No Mind Podcast Facebook page, or throw an email to nomindpodcast2021@gmail.com. Here we go again, round the table, say hi to everybody. Bob, how you doing? Sorry we had to do this again. We screwed up the first recording, so everybody has to say hello again.
Hello, and I'm really feeling calm, and I think that this... tonight's intellectual conversation is going to be very edifying, and I look forward to the peaks of intellectual discussion that we'll be reaching.
I'm going to go to Len next while everybody else searches for a dictionary to find out what the fuck edifying means. Or maybe that's just me. Hey, Len, how are you, man?
I can't really top that. I mean, Bob's not to be for six there. I'm talking to him 2 years in a podcast, and that's really like, wow. So, yeah, it's good to be back, and I hope there's more of this tonight.
Hey, Rick, glad you got your tech problem solved.
Got the tech problem solved. I'm just going to have to drink some more to try and figure out what Bob said. But, yeah, good to be here. Happy to get join in on this conversation.
And Darren, how are you, man?
Well, this has already started off weird because your introduction was perfect the first time. Yeah. And then we had the technical difficulties, and then you came in and actually duplicated the perfection in the second time, which is a rarity. Bob's very tranquil, and Richie was fairly calm, too. So I don't know what's going to happen from here on in. I just can't wait to see. It started well. It could only go downhill.
This podcast is being brought to you by the Twilight Zone.
Do not adjust your sets.
Okay, before we get going on the topic for the night, I do want to follow up just a tiny bit. I don't want to get lost in it, but I do want to follow up a little bit on the last conversation we had. I tend to be very outspoken during these podcasts, and often when I listen to them back, I think, I don't know if I said that the right way, blah, 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 blah. So I do want to say one thing. I do recall using terms on the last podcast about the critique of the structure of the podcast. I do remember using terms such as insidious and disgusting and stuff like that. And while I'm not going to apologize for that, I do want to make it clear that I was not aiming those comments at the individual. I was certainly aiming them at the perspectives that individual was defending. And in my head anyway, there's a difference there. And I don't ever think any of these conversations should become personal, at least from my perspective. I don't want to speak for anybody else. So I do want to say that if any of my comments were taken personally, that was not how they were intended. So I just wanted to say that and move on.
Can I comment on that? Because that's an interesting thing. I think a lot of people think that their opinions are not necessarily a reflection of themselves, but they take their opinions far more seriously than they should. And I think, an opinion is part of your personality, but it doesn't necessarily define you in the manner that if somebody disagrees with your opinion, that you don't take it that seriously. It's like, okay, that's a difference of opinion and nothing more. Whereas I think a lot of people, if you argue with them over something, both sides take it way too seriously. And it's like, no, it's just merely a difference of opinion. It's not, I don't hold anything against you. I don't think you're disgusting or anything like that. It's just, I don't particularly agree with your opinion and nothing more.
Exactly.
Darren,
right.
Darren, you just solved all of society's problems that they
exactly.
are having
yeah.
now.
Yeah, if only I could follow my own doctrines.
The opinions can be fluid too. I mean, one day you think one thing and then you find something out and you think something else. I mean, it's like you started arguing about what kind of bread you ate. One
Not
day
in the
you
last
like
podcast, they weren't.
Yeah. One day you like white bread, one day you like rye bread. I mean, they're both bread, but hey, it's all your opinion, you know. So, you know.
It's true, and while some opinions can be fluid, obviously, the more passionately you feel about something, the less fluid that opinion tends to be. It takes a lot more takes a lot more convincing to make me think that censorship is okay than it would be to make me switch to rye bread. So, Bob, yeah, you were going to say something earlier.
All it was saying 3/4 of what I say is what I really feel, and 1/4 is goofing around. So while I don't apologize for anything I say, I acknowledge that, we all say things that either we think are funny or we think are leading the conversation in an interesting way. Not that I necessarily think that anything I said I regret. Absolutely not. But things are said and things are taken back. And just like Rick and Darren said, whatever said. Like, I don't hold the person who asked questions of the last episode, I don't hold anything against them for their opinions. And I hope that they don't hold anything against me for mine. And that's really... Darren hit the nail on the head with that one.
Just one more thing on that, too. I think if it's a one-sided conversation, you're only getting the one side. And that's the option that the other person had to come on the podcast and actually explain their opinion. Because if we just have one explanation from them and then we counter that, but we don't, they were given the platform to counter our counter, but they chose not to take it up on that. But had they been here, they might have been able to explain their position more that would enable us to understand where they were coming from. But they chose not to, and I think that's why Mitch has several times invited people on the podcast to talk about their opinions and stuff, because
I think it's notable that we're using the pronoun they instead of cis and he and she. That shows we're woke.
Yeah, okay. If I was doing that on purpose, that would have been great.
Another point, just to leverage off what Darren just said, when we're talking about something someone said, it's very easy for us to become so incensed about what we're talking about that we forget that it's an individual that we're talking to, you know what I mean? Or that we're responding to is a better way to put it. We would probably be much more reserved in how we express ourselves if that person was actually on the podcast.
And 100%.
And I think Bob made a good point that, I think it's been said a couple of times, it can be relatively intimidating when people listen to how we speak to say, yeah, I want to go and be a part of that. But understand that, you know, a nebulous statement made by somebody that we're discussing, without that person there to counter what we say or to bounce the discussion off of, it's so much more difficult to remember that this is another person that we're talking to. I guess the end result of all of this is I think that conversation would have gone a lot better or a lot less inflammatory had that individual decided to come on the podcast and talk to us about it.
There's a camaraderie in being in conversation with people that's really helpful.
It really is. And not only does it ground the perspectives in a very human way, that sounds a little cliche, but it's true. Not only does it ground it, but all of a sudden, we as the conversationalists, we revert back to socially acceptable parameters of having a conversation with somebody. I don't think I would have called that perspective disgusting if the person had been on the podcast. I would have been equally as passionate about disagreeing with it, but I'm sure my vernacular would have changed. Anyway, look, the long and short of all this is I just want to make sure if this person ever listens to the podcast again, that none of the comments we made, and I think I can speak for everybody, were meant personally. We were certainly discussing and disagreeing with the perspectives, but this doesn't throw a shadow of any perspective on how we feel about that individual. Frankly, I don't know that individual, so I have no opinion. And all we had to go on were the comments. So anyway, enough about that. Let's move on to bigger and certainly different, if not better, things. The topics tonight are, in broad terms, class structure and teaching. But I want to start the podcast with a question to you guys. Something happened at the club, at the karate school that I train at, Jushin in Peterborough, about a week and a half ago now, I guess. And I've been struggling with it ever since. I've talked to Bob about it because he and I see each other all the time.
I'll vouch for that. He's been struggling.
I've been struggling a lot with it, and I really want everybody's input. And I don't mean this to be a huge talking point. I'm actually trying to make sense of this in my head. So let me lay the scenario out, and I'd really, really like everybody's honest feedback about this. It was between the two classes. We have a kids' class and an adult class, and there's a few-minute break between the classes. We've got an orange belt student. He came to us from another club. He's about, I think he's 63 or 64. So he's a little bit older than I am. I've never seen him before and have had very little experience with him up to when this incident happened.
How long have you been there?
Not long, maybe a month. Months. Rick, you know who I'm talking about. A couple of months.
On and off, but he doesn't come constantly, so.
Right, he's on and off in his attendance. We are between the two classes, and I decided that I wanted to spar a little bit, so I got him with me, and I made it very clear that we weren't actually orange. He's an orange belt, which is, for those not in the know, our ranking system goes white, yellow, orange, green, blue, brown, and then black. So he's in the upper echelon of the lower tier of the ranks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Now he's got a particular issue. He's so physically tense and tight all the time. So we sparred for a couple of seconds, and I could see how tight he was. So I said, "Look, let's change the parameters of what we're doing. We're just going to move around. It's not even sparring. We're not counting points. It doesn't matter who gets the point. We are just moving smoothly, throwing techniques. Yes, there's someone in front of us, but it's by no definition a contest. Look at it as a warm-up exercise. We're just trying to loosen up." So we start moving around. He's still rigidly, rigidly tight. So I'm trying to get across to this individual how important it is to try and relax at the right times and be tight at the right times. And for now, all that matters is relaxing. So we move around a little bit. I'm not blocking. He's not blocking. We're supposed to be going reasonably comfortably, like no one's going at a breakneck pace. So I said, okay, that's the parameters. He shuffles in and punches me in the mouth reasonably hard.
Okay.
Now, what happened then was I stopped the fight. I tasted a tiny, tiny bit of blood. I don't want to exaggerate it. He didn't split my lip open. But it was a hit that was hard enough that I'm tasting a little bit of blood. We started sparring again. I shuffled in and I purposely brushed his face, forehead, with a kick, with a crescent kick. That's just about my favorite kick. So I purposely did that. I put my foot down. Then I said, okay, now stop. And I said to him, okay, now that we got that out of the way, let's both take a deep breath. And let's try this again. And everything was fine going forward from there. Now, that's the scenario and that's the situation I'm having a hard time trying to figure out.
That's the plot. That's what happened. Now we get the story.
What I'm trying to figure out was, look, what he did was an absolute accident. What I did was absolutely on purpose. And my reaction is mired both in anger, because he really pissed me off. Like when he hit me in the mouth and I could taste blood, I was like, okay, I'm angry now. And I know myself well enough to know I am not at my best in terms of my own self-control when I'm angry. So I wanted to take a second. But then I did that anyway. It wasn't hard. It barely touched him. I don't want to exaggerate it or minimize it. I absolutely brushed my foot across his head. I don't deny that. That was what I set out to do. I was about 60% angry and about 40%. I think this is an important thing for me to do. I don't want to go into it in any more detail, but I'm curious about what your guys' perspective is. Not so much on what he did, but more on what I did, because I'm really struggling with this.
In essence, Mitch, you did it perfectly, in a way. You got hit. He wasn't supposed to touch you. So you basically showed him that if I want to, I can hit you whenever I want to. And you did, very, very lightly, You didn't hurt him. You didn't draw blood like he did. You did prove the point that, bing, I can touch you anytime I want, but we're not supposed to be doing that, are we? Right? And that's sort of the thing you did. You controlled your anger to the point where it's just, all right, bing, I touch you. Now we're just not going to do that anymore. As a black belt to an orange belt, he is setting the pace. So in essence, what he did was he hit you hard enough to bleed. In some places, it would be kosher for you to make him bleed. No, not in our club. That's not what we do. But it was good that you did say or spar him and go, bing, I can if I want to. And I have to, I have no trouble with that at all. I think that was your perfect reaction. I don't know. Perfect is maybe a bad word. It was a good reaction. You controlled yourself. You made the point that, you know, if I want to, I can touch you anytime I want.
I personally, and like, you might find this a strange reaction, I don't know why you're struggling with this at all. You've done nothing wrong. If that was my club, yeah, maybe I might say, hey mate, you're not supposed to do that. That would be the only thing that I would say. Listen, take it easy. You got to watch your control there. And then I would do what you did. And if that didn't work, he'd get a fucking smack. Simple as that. Because I've got a guy who trains with me regularly who every once in a while this rears its head. He's with me years. He spars incredibly tensely. He's Canadian, incidentally. He's not Darren. He's not Darren. Every once in a while, he for some reason, he kind of resets to this default mode. And in particular, the one thing I have major issue with him is if there's any new ladies starting the class, he takes great pleasure in hitting them full force in the face, and I won't have that. Now, I've gone beyond the stage of talking to him about it and maybe gentle touches. Now, if he does it, he gets a roar at, and if he does it again, he gets a belt off one of my senior grades or me. But rewinding back into the case in point, I don't think he did anything wrong. I think you dealt with it perfectly. I mean, you brushed him. It was just like a warning shot across his bow. And no, you think you handled it perfectly?
Yeah, I'm going to ruin this.
You should have decked him.
I might have missed the first part of it. You were talking about how tense he was. Do you mean tense in the fact that he's over aggressive tense or...
He's physically very tight. His movements are so slow because he's always muscularly tight. That's what I meant.
Okay, yeah, okay, that's what I thought. The first thing is, you said a couple key points. Number one, he was obviously in an uncomfortable and awkward situation, which you had to correct him on several times and stop and say, we need to do this, you need to do that, and stuff like that. So already he's in an uncomfortable position. Now, you did say his thing was completely accidental, which is understandable. He's only an orange belt. He's fighting with someone that's intimidating. He's already doing something that's not right, and you're already trying to correct him on it, which is building up his stress levels, and he's just not going to have the same control as somebody that's relaxed, and he's already tense, as you said. So he's already not relaxed, and then you trying to correct him over and over is not doing anything for his tension. So he's already in a volatile situation, so he ends up making a mistake. The second thing you said was, I think you said 60% something and 40% anger, something like that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Already as an instructor, there shouldn't have been any anger. You're an instructor dealing with a student. He had an accident. You stopped the fight, definitely, but it's to explain what happened and what he needs to do to correct that so that that doesn't happen in the future. You have nothing to prove by kicking him in the head, even if it's ever so lightly to prove a point. There's no point to prove. You're the instructor. There's nothing to prove there. You already explained to him what he needs to do. Then when he made a mistake, you need to stop him and explain the mistake. Lashing back out isn't correcting his mistake. Otherwise, he wouldn't have made the mistake in the first place.
See, I want to weigh in here for a second. I absolutely appreciate... Sorry, Bob, we didn't get your take on this. And before I react to anybody's comments, I want everyone's input. So sorry, Darren, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, no, I knew Bob said he wanted to go last anyway, so...
Okay, so Bob, go ahead.
Darren, you done?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. I can add some more stupid shit, but I think the point is there.
All I was gonna say was that Mitch is struggling with what was in his heart in the moment, And all I can suggest is that, to echo what Darren said, as much as what you did was in anger is bad, and as much as you did in edification, to use the word again, is good, and that's as far as it goes. Of course, you're in a sparring situation, and somebody just hit you in the mouth. There's going to be an emotional reaction, but I think the struggle you were going through is, of course, the perfectly proper struggle to go through. And in a perfect world, you'd be a robot and stop and say, I will not react emotionally to what just happened. But all I'm going to say is, in as much as it was anger, it's wrong. In as much as it was to educate, it was right. That's my take.
Okay, I'm not going to... I want, first of all, thank you everybody for your input, because it's really helping me focus a little bit.
Can I ask you a question, Mitch?
Yeah.
When you say you're struggling with it, are you struggling like you're feeling guilty about what you did, or are you just questioning whether what you did was right or wrong, or
both? I feel tremendous guilt over it, and
we've all been there. We've all been on that one.
I'm not sure I want to respond to what anyone said, because I don't want to make it sound like I'm trying to justify what happened. Maybe I can do it in as objective a way as possible. I agree with Darren. I agree. If I had to choose of all of your reactions, the one that strikes closest to home is Darren, and I'll tell you why. Look, among martial artists, and God forgive me, especially among male martial artists, there is a real ego that exists, and it exists strong, and it exists hard in that circumstance.
Oh, I've got another question, sorry.
Yeah, go ahead, Len.
Sure. Has this guy sparred you before?
Never, never.
And has he sparred, has he sparred in the club before?
Oh, he would have had to.
Yeah.
No, wait a minute. So maybe, hang on. One point I wanted to make is, he did not come up through the ranks with us. He came to us very recently as an orange belt. So, yeah, he may have done a little bit of sparring, but he certainly didn't come up through the ranks with us.
No, the reason I ask is...
Yeah, I'd never sparred with him before.
No, the only reason I ask is, if anyone spars in our club and they haven't sparred us before, everyone goes to Great Plains and say, listen, guys, we've all got to go to work tomorrow. We've all got stuff to do. So we're not here to kill each other. Okay.
But I doubt if your man was there to kill Mitch.
I'm just using that as an expression. So we always kind of set the boundaries that this is light contact. We don't go crazy here.
I'm just wondering, you kind of
answer my question was, maybe he came from a background where heavier contact was the norm.
No, let me clarify. First of all, there was nothing about what we're doing or what we were doing that could be defined as sparring. Like I said, I had taken the sparring out of it. We weren't sparring. We were just moving around. I told him, I'm not bothering to block. You're not bothering to block. We're just throwing a few techniques, trying to do it in a nice, relaxed way, and whap. So now, having said that, the second it happened, he was completely contrite. He was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry I did that, blah, blah, blah. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to say blah, blah, blah dismissively. He was extremely apologetic. And you could tell that he felt quite badly that he had done it, okay? But again, and again, just to make the point, so he should have, because we weren't sparring. If we were sparring and we're going at it and he clipped me, I'd be like, dude, that happens. We're sparring. It's fine. And I would not have reacted the same way. I think my reaction was based more around the fact that we weren't supposed to be sparring. The premise was just some relaxed movement, and that happened. So not only did it happen, it wasn't that I took the hit. I've taken tons of hits before, and it doesn't make me mad. What angered me so much was that it was so in opposition to the purpose of what we were trying to accomplish, and that I had gone out of my way to try to explain. So that's what motivated my anger. Now, to speak to what Darren had said, and partially to what Bob had said, I think anything in a dojo done in anger is wrong. Flat out, period, wrong. And I absolutely agree with Darren's point. This poor guy, he's a very humble guy, he's very quiet, he's not one of these big you know, puff out his chest kind of guys. He just wants to come and get back into it again. It's been a while since he's been training. He's 63 or 64, so he just wants to come up and try his hand at this again, and he ends up doing that. So he already feels badly. Now, this kind of takes us into the last talking point, and I'm going to say something, and it's going to sound like I'm defending what I did, and some of me thinks what I did is defensible. I had never sparred with him before. You know what? I'm not going to do it this way. Let's look at the last talking point. And you can tell that this talking point came directly out of this circumstance. If you're an active practitioner, which I maybe arrogantly classify myself as, I still work out, I still train, I still spar, and I'm an instructor at that club as well. How important is it for your students to know that you are, quote, unquote, better than they are? Does that even play a part in your role as an active instructor and their role as an active student? Does it matter if they think you're better than them?
I've never looked on it as a student, no matter what level they've come in at, as me being better than them. Because I don't know what they've trained at previously. I don't know what their mindset is, what they want to achieve. What I do like, what I expect from them is to respect the fact that I'm at it a long time, and to show me some respect that they're willing to learn. They could be an absolute novice, but have lethally fast hands and much better speed than me. It doesn't mean they're better than me or I'm better than them. So for me, it's a mutual respect, and I would hope that they would respect the fact that I've been at it a long time. It's my profession. And that's where it finishes with me. Like, I can get out on the floor one night and be tired, and someone can kick my ass. I can get out another night and be fresh and kick their ass. It doesn't bother
me. Okay, but
Lenny, there's absolutely no ego when you are sparring. There's no worry, no thought about you making sure that you come across as better, as Mitch phrases it.
No, because...
Come on.
Okay, I'll get out on the floor and I'll spar. Like, I could get out on the floor, say, me and Darren, and we'll have a good ding dong at things because we know each other. We know we're at it a long time. There's a reason I mentioned that. But I'll go out with someone who's a beginner. I never ever want to think, you know, these guys have to be put in their place or there's an ego with it. No. Because to me, that they won't learn from taking a beating, or they won't learn from being humiliated, or they won't learn from feeling belittled.
No, I don't think that's the question.
Hang on. Yeah. Okay, maybe I'm missing the point. Sorry, go on.
Let me just put this out there. Not that this is relevant to Mitch's question.
No, cool.
What if you had an orange belt who came at you and obviously thought he was better than you? Like, obviously disobeyed the rules of the game.
I would talk to them about it first, say, listen, we need to change this, you're a little bit reckless with that, you know. And
are you sure?
Okay. I would, yeah, no, and maybe I have done.
That's why Lenny has so many students, because he's perfect.
I'm not perfect, fucking no, I'm far from perfect. But no, I always have three levels of notes. Ask them, tell them, make them, or show them, tell them, make them. And I always try to aspire to those three levels before you ever get to the make them point, because... You know, that should be the last resort. Because they're there to learn. You know, it's for me, I've rarely had someone who's come in on an ego trip or a chest-beating trip to come into the dojo. Maybe they get that vibe when they come in the door. I'm not going to tolerate that bullshit.
Let me jump in here for a second. I don't think we need to qualify this by saying all of these individuals are arrogant, chest-beating, you know, gorillas. There could be some very humble people who come into the dojo who may have had some training, maybe not. But if they are, if they get into a sparring match with the instructor, and let's say I don't know how you structure it at your club, Lynn. When we spar, no one's counting points, but everybody knows who's scoring the point.
Exactly.
But occasionally, if there's a tournament coming up, we'll practice some structured sparring with point calling and all that stuff. If a novice, say someone who's, you know, I don't care what the rank is, they're a novice by comparison, they get into the ring with a black belt and they win that sparring match, and then they get into the ring with another black belt and they win that sparring match, isn't it human nature for that person to go, why am I here? I'm beating these guys on a regular basis. I am a better fighter than them. They've got nothing to teach me. Isn't that a natural reaction? And I'm not saying that's what happens, but if it did happen, isn't it a natural reaction for someone who wants to learn how to fight the guys at the club and win and go, I'm better than these guys, and therefore they have nothing to teach me?
That's a totally acceptable point, yeah. Yeah, I've rarely seen it happen.
Now, let's understand that most of the people who walk into a dojo have either limited or no experience in the martial arts. But this comes back to the question, is it or is it not important for your students to understand that you are more skilled than them? Isn't that a foundation for your ability to teach something? Doesn't that just make sense?
I think most people that come through the door and they see you as a black belt, or one as a black belt, automatically assume these people know what they're talking about. They're at this a long time to get to this level. For them, I think subliminally, mentally, they kind of accept that anyway.
This harkens on to the very last point in the talking point, and that is whether you come into that sparring situation as a coach or as an active fighter. Are you just there to coach them?
We've already set the parameter for this. You're an active practitioner as well as an instructor.
Okay.
You're not a coach. So forget about the coach thing. Someone who was really good but has retired from it. You're an active practitioner as well as an instructor.
How important is it that they don't see you as someone who is merely a coach who has retired and just pointing things out?
Bob's hanging his hat on this whole ego thing. Like,
well,
that's not the
three levels I spoke about. Ask them, tell them, make them. If you get on the floor and you're sparring away and they make a mistake, say, listen, you know, try this, try that. Or they come in at you like a bull in a china shop and you try and explain to them. You've done the ask them, you tell them. Then they get a few, okay, this is the way it's going. You want to spar this hard, okay, it's going to go down that way. And I think the school of hard knocks inherently teaches them, oh shit, okay, I probably barked up the wrong tree here.
But what happens if you can't do that? What happens if you get in front of a student who is actually a better fighter than you? Does that mean that you should say to that student, look, you're better than me, you shouldn't be here? It's clear that you're a better fighter than I am. This is what it comes down to, is it's easy for a new student to walk into a dojo and see people wearing a black belt and go, holy cow, he's wearing a black belt. This is why the mystique of the black belt pisses me off no end, because it gives so many not necessarily founded perspectives just because you're wearing a black belt. I don't mean you, Len. I mean anybody.
No, I know.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So when someone walks in a dojo and they see you wearing a black belt, immediately there's a perspective of, this guy's good. He must be. He's got a black belt on. Which, first of all, is nonsense. I've seen so many black belts who can barely walk a flight of stairs without falling down. Forget about actually the stuff. Like, sorry, Bob, I didn't want to mention any names. But
I only use the handrail part of the time.
But what happens as an instructor when you get in front of somebody? Again, I want to come back to this. How does it impact the relationship if the student doesn't think that they can learn something from you because they perceive themselves, either rightfully or wrongfully, as better than you are? I think it's deep in the whole premise of being an instructor that you need to be better than your student. If not, why the hell are you teaching them?
Better only at sparring, or better at the whole ball of wax of martial arts?
And that gets back to what Lenny was saying, is,
yeah,
it depends what they
consider
important. Tell
them, show
important.
Them, and then finally make them.
But
and
it,
I know
but
if
get...
I was sparring someone and I'm sparring like a mid-level green belt, and they start sparring harder, I'll stop and I'll go, you're getting pretty hard here, and you've got to understand that I will spar to your level. And if he keeps going and I start going and he keeps going, and it finally gets that he's still coming on to me, I was like, well, okay, fine, we're done. And it's like, after you talk to him, it's like, all right, you are sparring really well, but let's do some kata.
There has to be a point where you become a coach rather than someone who's theoretically supposed to be able to beat your opponent.
Yeah, but that's not what we're talking about. You're right.
It comes down to that.
Okay, let me ask you this. How do you make the transition from a practitioner to a coach? When someone walks in the dojo and I can't do kata, I can't fight, I'm so broken down physically that I can't do it anymore, how do I convince that person that I've got jack shit to show them?
You can still spar with them as long as they understand what's going on.
As long as they understand that they can whip my ass because I'm an old man.
Okay, now you're not conceding that it's possible to have a Rocky Mickey relationship.
No, I'm not. I'm asking you, how do you make that transition? How do I convince...
Point out things they're doing when they're sparring someone else, not sparring you.
There's so many different variations on this. Like the first one, we're talking about a student, there's a difference between a fresh student that's never trained before coming into a dojo and someone that's trained, say like any of us that moved and decided to train somewhere. So if I've been around for enough years, if I go into a club, if I don't think the instructor's better than me, I won't train there. Exactly. There is nothing they can teach me. So there is a difference between that. I'm not looking for a coach. When I go in, I'm not trying to compete. I don't need a coach to bring out the best in me. I want someone to teach me shit I don't know. So that's a different scenario altogether. Then you get someone, obviously a new student, even if you're old and decrepit, you're going to be better than the new student. It's just, that's just the way it works.
That's sparring.
And then as anything, yeah. So then the other thing is that there is a transition where, and this happens all the time, and I think it's part of the goal, unless you are actively trying to be the top of the world, like once you've reached your peak at whatever age it is, or abilities, or physical stature, you've peaked, so you're not going to get any better. So when you're teaching someone, your whole object is to teach them to be better than you. You're not bringing them up to be as good as you. You're trying to get them to be better than you and move on. So this happens all the time in people that are competing. They'll train as much as they can in that club, and then they must go to a different club to get either a different perspective or just have someone that's much better teaching them. It's just a natural progression of things. It's not an ego thing. It's just how shit works. And sure. Every gym does it. So that's kind of the difference between the coach and the instructor. It's not like a Rocky Mickey relationship. It's just your idea as instructor is to bring that person to the best of their ability. If the best of their ability happens to be better than yours, that you've done your job and you've done it well.
You say that every gym does it, but few dojos do it in Southern Ontario.
Well, they do bring people up to be the best they can be.
Yes, but they never say to the student, you've come as far as you can come with.
No, I'm not saying they say that. No, I meant the student. That's up to the student to go, okay, I need more training here. I'm not getting
it. I actually think it's up to the instructor. I mean, I think an instructor, depending on
what the student's goals are. No, because you can be a coach. Like, you can bring out the best in the person, but only to the best of your teaching ability.
But shouldn't you know what those limits are? And once you see a student who's reached the limit of what you can teach them, shouldn't you say, look, you've come as far as you can. Look, I'll tell you a small story. I play guitar poorly, and I went to a guitar teacher here in town. This is probably a year ago, because I wanted to get better. So I just picked one at random. I don't know the people in town. So I made an appointment. I went down for a class and we played for 10, 15 minutes. And he looked at me and he said, you're a better guitar player than I am. I can't teach you anything more than what you already know. There are other people in town who are better than I am or who can take you further than I can. So seek them out. Isn't it incumbent on a martial arts instructor to do the same thing? To say, and look,
have you ever heard of
it? It has happened
that?
At the club.
Well, I've
this
done
was
it.
On this was on Water Street. There was a young guy. His father wanted him to get into. He basically wanted him to get into the Olympic track, right? So he, not just to learn it, he wanted to compete at a national level. And this sensei, Mark Bell, he starts. Well, we don't do that. This isn't the club you want. And he gave him a couple of names of clubs that are in that route that he could have taken.
That's different. That's different.
Well,
that's a student.
Wait a minute, hang on. Let me.
Yeah, but Mitch, it also depends on the student. I mean, I've only been at the one club, but I was not into. I got a peek, and that was it. That's fine. But I wasn't in it. I want to be the best in the world. I just wanted to learn karate. I just wanted to work. That's all I want to do.
Yeah,
and
but
I love the club.
And that's
that
fine.
I'm in.
Absolutely. And there's nothing wrong with that. But wait a second. We're talking about a student who comes to the club. Let's say a student comes to the club and loves to spar. That's where I want to get good. I don't have any aspirations to going to the Olympics, because a student who walks into the dojo and goes, I want to be in the Olympics, or I want to compete on an international scale, of course we're going to say this is the wrong place for you. But a student who comes in and says, I just love sparring, they're not going to be turned away. Great, come on in. No. We'll spar.
And
blah, blah, blah.
But I don't want to do cut. I don't want to do lines. I don't want to do
anything. No, not necessarily.
All I want to do is spar.
Not necessarily.
Go to a kickboxing club.
Not necessarily. My point is, all of us, I think I can say this without fear of contradiction, but Darren, Bob, and Rick, please step in and correct me if I'm wrong. We all, at one point or another, reached a point where our instructor taught us as much as he can. There's just nothing else for him to teach us. That I think that's just a natural
progression. I think that's why we all moved on.
Right, and that's a natural progression relative to working out a club. Working out at a club. So isn't it? I'm arguing in opposition to whoever said that's up to the student. Isn't it also up to the instructor to look at the progression of the student and say, you know what, in the things that you are valuing, the things that you value, you've come as far as you can go here. It's time to spread your wings and go somewhere else.
Well, you can have that conversation, but it's still up to the student whether or not he says he wants to.
Yes, but that's my point. I think rare are the instructors who will say that. There aren't many karate instructors that I know of in our circle who will say to their students, you're done here. We've done all we can do. We've come a long way, but it's time for you to go and learn somewhere else. And I think that's a rare thing.
To be fair, I haven't had a student, like my experience is relatively limited to some others here. But to be fair, I haven't had a student who was at that level. Now Lenny probably has, so I'd like to hear his input.
Yeah, two have come to mind in recent times, and for different reasons. One, she wants to, Olympics is her dream, but she wants to pursue a particular kind of competition, which is different to what we would have practiced over the years. So I've told her, by all means, train here, but if you want to excel at this, you need to go elsewhere. And she trains three nights a week with another club because that's their specialty.
Right,
And I've also got a guy who's been with me since he was 7 years of age. He's now 19, and he's just looking to branch out. He's pursuing more of a route of mixed martial arts. And again, okay, I can help him with his stand-up game, but when it comes to the ground game and grappling, I'm very limited on that. So again, with him, I'd say, this is what you want to do. You got to go and explore elsewhere. And he's happy doing that, but he still has his route with us, and he uses us to hone what we've worked on for years. But he'll add to it as well. And they go with my blessing, because if that's the path they want to take, I'm not going to say this is the only way, because that's unfair, because you're only just, you know.
Oh, dude, there are instructors who insist that their students don't leave, and that's a creepy thing to see.
That's massaging their own ego, though. I'm the guru. I'm the only way. Like, it's not, never. And one thing I've preached time and time again on this is over the years that I decided to branch out and look at other styles myself, I realized how much a novice I am and how much is out there to learn. So it would be hypocritical to say, don't go elsewhere. We don't have the handle on this old way, you know.
I want to link this back a bit to that story I had told at the beginning about what happened a couple of weeks ago at the club. It's so easy, and whether we all know it or not, maybe I shouldn't say this. I'll say it for myself. It's so easy to get caught up in the arrogance of being an instructor. It's so easy to get caught up in the ego of having people come up and bow to you and do anything you tell them because you tell them to do it and all that stuff. And linking it back to that situation where I was doing that exercise with that orange belt, I'm struggling so much with it, I think, because at least some of my reaction was bounded in my ego and not in what was best for the student. Now, maybe what I did... No. I will not forgive lapses in ego by brushing it off by saying you're only human. Fuck that. That's how you turn into the worst arrogant instructor on the planet. To say, well, I did something wrong, but you know what? I'm only human. No.
You're allowed to make mistakes, Mitch. It doesn't mean you're going down the dark path forever.
It does if I don't recognize it as a mistake. If I make a mistake, yes, I'm only human. But if I don't recognize it as a mistake, admonish myself appropriately and correct the behavior, then that's by definition an asshole.
In that vein, Mitch, how much do you have to beat the shit out of yourself?
What's going to be enough for you? Yeah, enough for me will be when I understand what I did, why I did it, and make amends for the part of it that I shouldn't have done. That's when I'll stop beating myself up. Objectively watching the circumstance, and Rick and Len, I get what you guys said originally about what I did. And objectively, I would probably agree with you. If I was watching another black belt and this orange belt and they went through that same exchange, I would probably go, you handled that pretty well. But 90% I don't know why I'm putting a percentage on it.
I don't know.
Motivation is everything. What you do matters less than why you do it. And I don't think I did it for the... Even if what I did was the right thing, I don't think I did it for completely the right reasons. And that's what I'm struggling with. So, first of all, thank you guys for having this conversation with me, because, wow, has it ever focused my perspective on this. Maybe it was the right thing to do. I don't think I did it for completely the wrong reasons, so I'm well on my way to moving past this, and it's hard for me to do that. So thank you for everybody's input, because it was all awesome.
Well, I want to obviously remember it for a long time. So
you think? So I will add to that, Mitch.
I kind of gave my opinion straight away with Rick there, but then you added a bit more in about the guy's history and the fact that, you know, he was more humble and so on. So I'm more willing to kind of side with Darren's point of view on that one. That, yeah, okay, if he was just a guy who came in to sort of, I'm going to throw my weight around and blah, blah, blah. Yes, what I said at standby, but the fact that he's so humble, and you said straight away he was contrite about it and he apologised. Yeah, okay, I'm going to more lean towards what Darren's way of thinking was.
Now, just to throw another clig light on this, and I'm going to say this, this doesn't come easy to me. I'm going to say this in defense of what I did. If this was a student who'd come up with us through the ranks from white, yellow, orange, and we'd have experience with each other and blah, 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 I probably wouldn't have done what I did. But honestly, I do believe that it's important for an instructor and a student in an instructional relationship that student understands that this person has something to teach me. And in that moment, I think it was important. And again, I'm not speaking to my motivation, because my motivation in the moment was predominantly ill-conceived. But I think the good that came out of it was there was a demonstration that I might have something that I can impart to you. And I don't think that was necessarily a bad thing. That's why I'm struggling with this. There's good and bad. There's right and wrong all mixed into this whole 15-second exchange. And it's hard for me to filter all this through.
We discussed this now for an hour. I would say your moral compass is pointed pretty much in the right direction, because you're having a problem with this.
Yeah.
Let's go around the... Thank you very much for saying that. I still consider myself a piece of shit, but let's go around the table once and discuss how much of a piece of shit I am. No.
No,
you're right. We're almost an hour in. I just want to go around one more time. I'm going to make a statement. Last comments on this statement. The statement is, it is important for an instructor to demonstrate to a student that they have something to teach them.
As important as that is, it's also as important to have the student understand how old you are and how much you have to teach them, if anything from a physical standpoint.
this opens up a whole nother can of worms. And I'm not going to go into it, but I will pry the lid off that can just a little bit. I am so non-ego formed that my understanding of self is completely based in my physicality. So if I can't
you're
do
it, you're man.
I know. You think? I'm 60. I can't do it. This is my struggle. The struggle is real, folks. It's hard for me to make that journey from I can't do, but I can teach. That's tricky because my whole life has been, my whole teaching in the martial arts life has been, I can do, so I can teach. And it's a tricky, and my heart goes out to anybody in a physical realm making this journey because I'm having a hard time with it. Anyway, Darren, thoughts?
The problem is I had a lot of comments to make on the last one, but I got cut off. I didn't get to finish. And you just kind of brought up one of the topics that I was going to comment on, but we're just going on the last comment that didn't
Don't
even have anything
time,
to what you just said. No, because you were doing a roundup on a different comment. And then, but you, what you just commented on there was from a previous one. So now I'm struggling to figure out what am I supposed to round up or comment on.
Is it important for you as a teacher to demonstrate to your students that you're better than they are?
100%. In whatever the term and which you had in your topics, it was quoted. So I think that's the important thing to remember. It's like it's not necessarily better, which is what you had in quotes. It's do you have something to teach? And
right.
That's the key. And if they don't recognize it, then they don't have to train there. If they recognize that you have something to teach, whether it's vocally, physically, mentally, or any form, if they're going to get a benefit of being there, you have to be able to demonstrate that.
Mitch's struggle is with physically as opposed to mentally.
But here's how it goes. If you get a new student in, you're still physically capable of teaching a new student. You're still physically imposing. There'd be nothing for a new student to ever think that they couldn't learn anything from you. And then you take it one step further. If you get someone that's trained for a number of years, then they're able to recognize what an instructor has to teach them. And if that becomes a coach thing, and that doesn't, when I say coach thing, that doesn't mean you're decrepit. It means if you're demonstrating the side kick, it's going to the knee as opposed to the head, but you can still demonstrate the kick. And if someone's been training for a while, they can understand what you're teaching them. If you're a beginner, then you're obviously better than the beginner. If they've trained long enough, they're going to recognize what you have to offer. And if what you have to offer isn't what they're looking for, that's fine.
Okay, so I'm in a car accident tomorrow, and I become a paraplegic, and I'm now in a wheelchair.
That's not
yeah,
going down
then,
that
then
road.
You're not teaching. Then you're not teaching.
Not teaching.
That is definitely the end of your teaching career.
So I can't teach because I can't do. That's what you're saying.
You can coach. No. You can coach. You can stand in the background and hire a fucking. It's like if suddenly I was deaf or I couldn't speak. If I had something to say, I will get an interpreter to say it for me. Because I can no longer say it. So if you have stuff to teach and you have somebody that is so good that they can demonstrate everything that comes out of your mouth and that's how you want to teach, then that is an option if you're crippled. If you are somewhere and there is no club for 6,000 miles and you are in a wheelchair and you're the only coach or instructor around, okay, we'll deal with it. If you're in a city like Toronto and there's a million clubs and you're in a wheelchair,
that's a good point.
Let's just recognize that you're not going to have the club that's making
fair
a lot
enough
of money.
All right, okay.
You know, it's nothing against an ego thing. It's just you're not going to do it.
All right, that's it. Let's take a break for a couple of minutes, folks. We'll be back after the break and we'll get to the actual talking points. Okay, folks, we're back from the break. Before we get on to the next talking point, I want to give Darren an opportunity to say some stuff, because just before the break, it got a little heated with a bunch of voices weighing in, and I get the feeling Darren had something that he wanted to add to that. So, Darren, what did you want to say?
Yeah, an interesting concept. Years ago, when I was doing the grappling in Canada, and I thought I was fairly proficient in it. And then I moved over to Ireland, and I was training at Kavanaugh's Straight Blast Gym, and that was going well. And then one day, there was another Canadian that he just happened to be on holidays, and he wanted to train there just for its notoriety and everything. And he ran his own dojo in wherever it was in Canada. And he participated in the class, and we were all grappling, because the Straight Blast is a, it does a format where it's constantly grappling with everybody. There's very little, not very little instruction, but they instruct something, and the rest is kind of, you're free-flowing or sparring, if you will. So the emphasis is on just continuous sparring with a little bit of instruction in each class. So you're not bombarded with techniques that you're going to forget. So it's always like one technique, and then you just roll, and eventually incorporate these techniques as you go on. And this guy didn't seem very good. He was adequate, but he was just kind of, he was like a student. And I remember asking him, I'm like, Jesus, man. I said, you run a club. I said, nothing against your abilities, but how do you run a club? And he explained it in a really interesting fashion, which I adopted when I moved back to Canada for like about a year to do the grappling class at Jushin. And I kind of incorporated that philosophy in. And he said, well, basically what it is there's a lot of people that want to grapple, but there's very few grappling clubs. So he opened up a club. So he runs the club. He's the main instructor, and he pays the bills, and he does everything, and students come in. And it was kind of a learn and grow mentality. So some people might come in there that are better than him, but they're not running their own gym. So the idea is everybody learns and grows together, and it makes everybody kind of improve. And then, okay, that's fine. If you improve way beyond that and you want to go somewhere else, so be it. But his whole thing is, I'm running the show, but we're all here to learn. I'm not that grand poobah, and nobody knows anything, and everything that I say goes, and I'm the instructor, and I already know everything, and I'm passing my knowledge down to you. I'm, as an instructor, or the owner of the club, I'm learning just as much as you guys. And especially in an art that was ever-changing and constantly growing, you still have to learn as well. If you just learn from an instructor and you learn everything he teaches you, and you now run a club, you're only going to teach up to the level that you've been taught by somebody else, if that's all you're doing. But if you're constantly studying tapes and other fights and all that stuff, and maybe even going to outside things like Lenny did going over to Thailand, you're constantly improving your knowledge, and you're kind of distribute that amongst anybody that's training with you. And they, in turn, might also be going to other seminars and other clubs and everything, and coming and imparting their knowledge. And I think as a true instructor, it's not a matter of you teaching them everything you know. You might be learning a lot of shit from them, especially if they've trained somewhere else or they're bringing a different art in. And I think
this sounds like a pretty fucking enlightened way to run a club.
I remember, as I said, that's what I brought back when I went to Jushin, because that guy had no qualms about anybody being better than them. If they, and he said, he in his dojo, there's people that are better than him, but they're there because they're getting better, because they're constantly rolling with other people. They're all studying tapes on other things that were going on. So there was loads of times where he'd be conducting a class, and somebody would say, here, listen, I was training somewhere else, or I was rolling with this other guy, or I watched this tape, and I saw a different way of doing this. And the instructor would say, show us. And he shows you, and they're like, all right, let's try that. Everybody try that. So that's the instructor is not necessarily the most knowledgeable person in the class. It's just right. The leader of the class.
This is the opposite of the way we were brought up.
I know that, but it's a good way to do it. It's just like if you take any manager or owner of a company,
right?
If you don't listen to what your fucking employees are saying, that business is not going to go anywhere, unless you know everything.
Darren, you did that at Jushin. I mean, you took over the rolling and the grappling. I mean, none of us had anything to do with the grappling.
I know, but and that brings me to that point too, because I got a couple guys that had actually competed in grappling tournaments and full contact and stuff. And they started training, because at the time that was the only club in Peterborough that was offering grappling.
Yeah.
And I remember one particular guy that actually fought in, at the time it was a well-known Canadian, what was it, TKO? I can't remember what it was called, but it was a Canadian equivalent of the UFC at the time. Nice. And this guy was trained, and there was a couple times where he said, oh, we did it this way. And I saw the way he did it, and I said, yeah, that way works. This is why I'm doing it this way. And he was like, oh, yeah, that was a different perspective. But I also took his perspective in. So what we ended up doing is we did both perspectives in the class, and each one depended on the situation you were in. So he was able to recognize that I had something to offer him, even though he was better than I was. Like, he could tap me out. Anytime him and I rolled, he tapped me out. So you could immediately say, okay, that guy's got nothing to learn there. He can go somewhere else. But I also had a lot of perspectives that he hadn't learned before. So he was happy enough to remain there because he was getting, even though he could tap me out, he was getting perspectives that would enabled him to get better as a grappler that he didn't have before. It was like a symbiotic relationship where everybody kind of grows. And then if you grow past, then you go somewhere else. But
let's understand something, too, that this... Look, I don't think anyone could argue that perspective is incredibly enlightened. But let's also understand that kind of opportunity to have that enlightened perspective is pretty new in the martial arts world. Look, when Bob,
yeah,
when
was,
you...
Jesus, that was 20 years ago that it was... Yeah.
And that's new, Bob. Bob, when you and Rick started the martial arts, there were two clubs in Peterborough, Benny's and Jushin. There really wasn't much else out there. So anyone who walked through the door wasn't going to have much to show anybody. I'm not saying this with any intent other than saying, look, that's a brilliant way to run a club. That's a brilliant perspective to have. But that's a pretty new perspective. That's the opportunity to have that perspective is pretty new.
The entire structure of the club is completely different, 180 degrees from each other. One involves evolving by sparring with others and taking on teaching points from them. And the other one is a top-down, this is the way we do it, and we'll bring you up to our level. And it's entirely at odds with each other.
The thing is, I think there's room for both. If you join a classical, call it classical martial art, like karate, where there's a tradition and a way of doing things, and this is the structure of how we do it, and this is a good lead-in to our next talking point, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. So let's leverage this into our next talking point. In the past, we have discussed, in general, two types of structures of classes. One is a very strict, and you know what? I'm going to let Bob define the parameters of this, because he's the one who carries this banner higher than anybody. So, Bob, can you describe your ideal perspective of a strict separation of student-teacher in a club environment?
It's so great that we had that previous talk, because it's in exact opposition to what I was going to say. My favorite and my most productive and I'll hold up to the end of my days best way of running classes is the one in which the instructor gets up, demonstrates the technique, then everybody gets up with a partner and they do the technique over and over and over for 15 minutes, and then they sit down again and they repeat, rinse and repeat. Every junior student is paired up with a senior, so the senior passes on tips and tricks to the junior, and that's how the learning is done.
So there's no frivolity, there's no joviality, there's no joking around in class.
Absolutely none, and I love that, but that may be just me.
No, but more than that, I want to define these two structures as clearly as we can. Not only was the class structure that defined, there was no interpersonal reaction or relationships outside of the club. Like you wouldn't go out with the instructors for a drink after class, for instance.
No.
On the other side of that fence is a teaching environment wherein there's a certain amount of interpersonal relationships developed during class. There's some joking around. There's some joviality. The lines between strict teacher and instructor and student are less defined. And interpersonal relationships can develop outside of the club as well. So there's our two extremes.
Can I just give my opinion of the second?
Yeah.
Jiu Shin epitomizes the second fuzzy relationship perspective, right, to me.
Yes.
I was brought up in Jiu Shin. I have a big place in my heart for that method, but experiencing the other delineation method, I far prefer that. That maybe I'm willing to concede, and matter of fact, it's probably the case that that's more my personality than it is necessarily the you know, how good the structure is objectively. So that's it.
Okay, but let's talk about those two different structures, pros and cons. Let's take Bob's structure, because honestly, I see the good and bad in both. So let's talk about the strict delineation between instructor and student.
I
love Lenny's noises.
Yeah. I've had both sides of this, of being distanced from students and getting close to students. And possibly, in hindsight, it's one or two I've gotten too close to. There's some I've gotten close to have now become almost, I won't say business partners, but they run the club with me, and it has turned out really great because they work the way I do. But there's others who I've become close to, and when you try and train in certain things, they kind of, nah, I'm not doing this, I'm not doing that, it doesn't suit me, and their own ego starts to take over. And it's a double-edged sword. It's damned if you do, damned if you don't. In hindsight's a great thing to have. And the more I look at it, I'm kind of thinking I would lean a little bit more towards Bob's way of thinking, that there should be lines that you don't cross and maybe don't get too familiar.
Rick, what do you think?
Well, going from my experience, and I have experience with Jiu Shin only, we, as Bob said, we are sort of friendly. But when I was coming up through the Q ranks, once you are in the dojo, if Sensei says jump, you asked how high on the way up. There was no favoritism. There was no arguing. There was no, as Lenny just said, I don't think I'll do that. You just did whatever it was. And it didn't matter if it was Sensei or one of the other black belts or one of even the brown belts. Whatever the person that was taking the class said to do, that's what you did. And personally, that's the way I still like to have my classes, is in class, in the dojo, whoever's at the front, especially if I'm at the front, when I say jump, you jump and you ask how high on the way up, blah, blah, blah. But also, I mean, I can't argue with the fact that half of my friends are people from Jiu Shin. So, I mean, I've been friends with all the people from Jiu Shin. So as far as outside the dojo goes, they're so it's like, I can't go along with this. Let's keep the delineation. In the dojo, not a problem. Outside the dojo, hey, let's go have a drink.
Darren, what do you think about all this?
We've kind of hashed that out before. I tend nowadays to think that, yeah, people are mature enough to understand the difference between the two. You go in the dojo, it's a different situation than being outside. And I think if there's a respect thing going on, it doesn't matter what happens outside there. Once you enter there, it's a different ball game. You're there to take it serious. You're there to train. If the lines are blurred, then you can have that conversation and you can change it afterward and go, okay, this person can't distinguish the two, therefore I cannot have a relationship outside the dojo with that person. And you leave it at that. Now, on the same thing, I think you still have to conduct yourself on a professional level outside the dojo. So, yeah, you can go out with a few drinks. You're not going to go out and get swashbuckled and do something stupid. Like, I think you do have that obligation and responsibility if you're trying to run a dojo that, you know, you behave responsibly outside. I think you can have a relationship with people outside, even go as far as to have a good party and maybe get drunk and stuff. But I think there is a clear line where you don't cross that.
Sorry, so I'm just going to add a little to what I said before, and that is I actually enjoy the hard line delineation. I enjoy the fact that I don't know these people outside. And again, I'll say again, that's probably just me because I'm a pretty antisocial person.
I think that's exactly it.
Yeah.
Like I think I don't know about you guys, but did anybody else going up through the ranks want to actually go out and associate with people above them? Like, I remember going up through the ranks thinking, fuck, I'd love to have a drink with that guy. Or you always want to be part of that group.
Dude,
and then when there was, like, club picnics and stuff like that, there was always the higher belts were over in one section, the lower belts were in another section. Exactly. And you always wanted to, and you had tournaments and everything. You always wanted to go hang around the higher belts.
I remember specifically, Darren, about that point. We were there on a Saturday, and Tom was there. He was still working out, and there was all the guys. You might have been there. I don't know. And Sensei comes over, and he goes, we're going to go for a beer after. You want to come? And I went, thank you, Sensei, but no, I can't. Tom came over, my brother, and he reamed me. He says, you don't ever say no to Sensei. He says, do you know what he's giving you? You're giving you the honor of coming out, and what? And I'm going, blah, 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 right? But it was. There was that delineation there. There was definitely a big delineation.
There is, and I think you want to be part of that.
Of course,
you want to be part of that group. So I think there is something to that. To have no contact with students, I think just not. I don't know. In my mind, it's not good. Like I like the fact that you can eventually have a relationship.
The problem is when you have that relationship with students, when you can blur those lines a little bit. It becomes very, very tricky to run a class effectively, to run a school effectively. I've seen circumstances where black belt instructors, they've got a friend of theirs who they've met at the club when they joined and they got to know each other and blah, blah, blah. And I've seen rank awarded because they didn't want to lose that friend. They felt if I didn't promote this person, that person's going to not be my friend anymore.
But in the grand scheme of things, does that really make a big fucking deal?
Yes, it fucking does. Look,
slow down. Just wait. I know where you're getting at. But nobody's, like, we're not paramedics here. Like, awarding that person doesn't mean they're going to misbotch an operation on somebody doing a brain surgery or something.
Sorry.
And therefore, you shouldn't have awarded them that diploma in brain surgery.
No. Let me jump in here because, Darren, No. Okay.
Bob agrees with me, I could tell.
That thought process leads to where we are in the martial arts right now with a bunch of shitty martial artists. And the ironic part, if I go, look, so I give this guy his green belt, like in the grand scheme.
No, that's not what I was saying, Mitch. It might be a one time based on what you said, where maybe that person just shouldn't have got it, blah, blah, blah. But get aside that. Let's just take, I don't know who's listening to this, but let's take Zhu Xin. There's no relationships aside. Do you think there might have been somebody along the way that got a belt that they shouldn't have got, and that had nothing to do with the relationship between the instructor and the student?
Dude, I can promise you that there were a million belts that were awarded.
There you go.
Right.
So in the grand scheme of things.
What do you mean?
Hang on, Daniel went up through the ranks, and every time his grading came up, I may or may not have been on the board, probably was, but I did not have a say in whether he passed. I did not vote on whether or not he passed. It was left up to other people.
Conflict of interest.
Because of the conflict of interest, exactly. I could put out a couple of points, and then that was it. I did not have a say. Anybody who's that personal,
which I acknowledge,
which has that personal connection to that student, doesn't have a say in whether or not they pass.
Untrue, because Mark Bell promoted Darren. If anyone should have been conflicted out of that decision, it should have been Mark Bell. Right? He was his father, for God's sake.
Did anyone disagree with the promotion.
I did. When Mark Bell, I was.
Yeah, but you disagree with everybody's.
No, see, don't fucking do that. That pisses me off.
Yeah.
Someone else talk. I got to pour a drink because I'm seething over.
We've hashed that out before. I know Mitch's disagreements and everything.
No. Look, I want to make this clear. Darren is flat out one of the best martial artists I've ever known. Absolutely. And I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that because he's on the podcast or because he's my friend. I'm saying it because I actually believe it. Now, having said that, Mark Bell came to me when he was considering promoting Darren to a black belt.
And he said, I remember all this.
He said, I'm not telling it for your sake. I'm telling it for everyone else's sake. Mark Bell said, do you think we should promote Darren to a black belt? And I said no. And the only reason I said no, and this was a very youthful, I was 23 or 24 at the time.
Fuck you. I was 23 or 24. You were 30.
Yeah, all right, so I was
27.
Fuck
I love
you.
That. Fuck
I'm
you. You were 30.
You, motherfucker.
Yeah, you were an old 30.
Darren and I were having a couple of drinks a couple of nights before, and Darren said, and I actually respected him for this. He said, I don't give a shit about getting my black belt. I don't give a shit about it. It's not important. I just want to work out. I just want to train. I don't care about my rank. And then my young, arrogant, old, 30-year-old whatever head, when Mark Bell said, should we give Darren his belt? The reason I said no was not because I didn't think he was good enough. It was solely because, and I don't know if I could defend this now, but I said, he doesn't want it. He doesn't care. And I thought that...
Oh, my God.
Hang on. Okay, yeah, I was an asshole, all right? Give me a break.
Yeah.
At the time, I thought, shouldn't you at least want it? Shouldn't that be part of the prerequisite? And I know that's fucked. I know that's fucked.
Listen. Mitch, Darren, hang on.
No, Richie. No. This is Richie. This is more important.
Go ahead.
Mitch, would you not have recognized that was a self-destructive thing for me to have said? Probably in that state, I wanted a black belt more than anything in my life, but I didn't think I was deserving of it. So my kind of self-destructive thing was to say, I don't fucking want it. I don't care whether I get it or not. Even though at that time, that was probably my biggest goal.
You're giving me you're giving me way too much credit, dude. I was a stupid, young, inexperienced, naive kid at the time.
You said that, and I said at the time when Sensei asked me, I looked at Sensei and I said, Sensei, when I started, Darren was a green belt, and I had my second degree at that point. It's like, give him the goddamn black belt. He's been around forever.
Which
in retrospect, now that we're doing that grandfather thing, we've had that in podcast before.
Well, no, wait, no. Hang on.
No, you went through a green belt grading. I don't know how many times you went through a blue belt grading. A couple of times, you went.
You think you'd get it right?
Oh, you are vicious, Mitch.
Sorry, guys.
Vicious.
I'm just fucking around.
Anyway,
look. The point here is we're way off topic. There's a point.
Yeah.
But the point here is my perspective at the time was wrong.
Yes.
He should have gotten his belt. I absolutely admit that. So could somebody please drag this back to the talking points? I've lost the thread of this. Oh, yes. Sorry, I remember. Because we were talking about the separation of instructors and students.
That's
and if those interpersonal relationships exist, shouldn't that instructor who has those interpersonal relationships be conflicted out of the decisions whether or not to promote a student? And then I brought it back to Darren. Shouldn't Mark Bell have been conflicted out of having an input into that decision to promote Darren?
Did he not ask all the black belts at the time?
He asked
a lot of people.
Maybe, but...
Bob?
I don't remember. What the fuck? Oh, fuck you.
All right, look, let's bring this back into a more broad discussion. Jiu Shin was absolutely a blurring of lines of relationships and always has been. Either a club blurs the lines or they don't. Bob has had experience with, I know his kendo club was this way, but he's had experience with clubs that absolutely have that separation. Let's talk for a second about the pros and cons of doing that. Why is that a good thing, Bob?
To start, like I said, I'm not going to predict how much of this has to do with my own personality, which admittedly is as antisocial as I almost can think of. I'm not in any personal relationships anymore. I was, believe me. I don't have many friends. I think I have two. That may be just an outgrowth of that personality trait in me.
Bob, you're saying your perspective is impacted by your personality? Shocking.
I can't say that. I can't say that for sure.
I'm going to assume it.
But I admit to loving that aspect of those dojos.
Okay, why?
In which they did that.
Okay, why? So expound on the virtues of it. Why is it a good thing?
Okay, first of all, it's proper. There's no friendship. There's no, corruption. There's no sexual shit going on. And there's a healthy respect. There's a healthy division between me and those that I'm learning from. I love the they show I try to do. And yes, there may be debate on how good they are at showing it, but I've been lucky in thinking, or at least in thinking, that I've been with some of the best Aikido and Kendo dojos and that there are around, or were around, and I think they did a great job in that style of teaching.
You know, it's funny because I was weaned on and continue to exist within a structure that blurs those lines. And the more experience I have, the more I'm starting to think Bob's right, that a strict delineation is the way to go. Now, I can speak, and I will, because there are things to be defended relative to having a blurred line. I'll give you an example. We've got a kid at the dojo right now who's got some developmental issues, and that kid would never have gotten as far as he's gotten in the kind of structured environment that Bob's describing and advocating.
Good objection.
So now I'm not saying that that justifies it. I'm saying that's just a matter of fact. This kid needs interpersonal relationships. This kid needs that connection in order to progress. And I have been shocked at this kid's progress. And that never would have happened in that structured environment. Having said that, I have also seen the negative side of that blurred line sort of thing. Again, going back to people who have been promoted who shouldn't have been because of their interpersonal relationships. So it's a tricky conversation. Len, what do you think, man?
That last case you brought up there, Mitch, I mean, I've got a lot of kids who have varying learning difficulties. You know, I'm kind of testament to the fact that I have to bend with the needs of the student a lot at times because... And particularly because, you know, my biggest thing is kids coming through, and some kids respond well to discipline, some kids respond well to that little bit of coaxing and more personal touch. So it's I can see both sides of it, and it's for me, it's an ever fluid situation. I kind of read the room per se and say, okay, this guy I need to be really structured with, this guy I need to be a little bit more personable with, you know. So
during what I just said, I was talking entirely as a student and not as a teacher. So my perspective means nothing when it comes to Lenny's perspective.
Bob, hang on a sec. Bob, you ran a club in Toronto for like 15 years.
Yeah.
How did you run that club? Was it with those clear lines of delineation or was it with more interpersonal relationships?
Yes, it was.
But I didn't have the number of students that Lenny does, and I didn't have people with special needs except that one that we both know.
But that doesn't matter. If you have two students...
Darren, go ahead, Darren.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if you have two students, they're two different individuals. You can run that structured thing, but we're not in feudal Japan where this is the way we teach and you either learn it or you get the fuck out because this is how you must be a warrior and blah, blah, blah. No, nowadays, it's... I'm not saying the woke thing and all that shit, but you have a bunch of students, you're all trying to bring out the best in them. I think that's the whole ethos of martial arts in general. Let's bring out the best in every student and make them the best martial artist they can be. And
Darren, that's
having
been going
a, having a rigidly structured class is not going to work because not everybody's going to be able to do it. But if you can run a class and recognize quickly, this guy over here doesn't learn the same way as everybody else, so you can adapt that. He learns this way, this guy learns this way, and you just blend it all in and you just bring everybody up.
What I do want to say is, Darren, it sounds like you're talking about quality versus quantity. I agree with you that the structured class will leave a lot of people behind. However, I'm not sure that the structured class doesn't produce the better students.
There should be no reason why a student that is able to learn quickly will not advance any less quickly just because you're enabling the lesser students to continue.
Okay, Bob, go ahead before you blow a blood vessel.
I bring this back to the metaphor of teaching piano. How do you blur the lines there?
Okay, Bob, here's an example. I will give you an example. You are a piano instructor, you're sitting beside your student at the piano, you're working on a particularly difficult piece that the student is having a lot of trouble functioning through, and they break down in tears beside you because they can't get it. They're so frustrated that they can't function, they can't process it, and they burst into tears.
Not a fair comparison.
Why?
Yes, it is.
Because if a student is frustrated at the fact that they can't learn the thing, that is a separate question from how you teach.
You said you walk in, I show you what to do, you do it. So you show the student what to do, they're having trouble doing it, and they burst into tears. You're required to blur those lines. You have to show a little humanity. You have to show a little bit of compassion.
No, the less humanity you show, the better.
Listen, so you let here's an interesting thing. I think everybody's taught here, everybody can attest to the student that looked like they were destined to fail, and they ended up being really, really good. Does anybody remember the student where you go, that guy's a fucking loser, but they put so much effort in, and all of a sudden they're teaching other people, and you're like, holy fuck.
I'll take it one step further. The student that you thought was destined to fail, they got marginally good. I don't care how
good. That's what I mean.
Right, but it doesn't matter whether they end up being great or not. They got better than you thought they could be, and they wouldn't have gotten that good if you weren't willing to blur that line, if you weren't willing to offer a little compassion.
Maybe they got that good because you didn't blur the line.
Not every individual learns the same, therefore you can't teach every individual the same.
You can't disagree with that.
That's fucking fact. That's scientific.
Wait a sec. I want to explore this with Bob a little bit because he's wrong. So I want to challenge him a bit on this. Bob, are you saying that every student that walks through the door of a dojo learns effectively with the same methodology?
No.
Well, that's what Darren just said. Not every student learns the same way, and you said no, that's wrong.
Look at what they do. Look at what they do with privates in wartime. You do this, or you're out.
How many fall out? Compared to how many make it through
because of it? How do you maximize the number who get better?
And this is the conundrum.
Yeah, that's
quality versus quantity. Do I want lots who are pretty good, or do I want the two or three who are awesome? I agree, Bob.
No, I didn't say that. I want the number. I want the
here wartime. That's
who are getting
sorry.
Better.
Hang Holy on. Shit. Sorry. This, hang this on, Darren. True. Bob, say that again. Say that again, Bob.
I want the maximum number who get better.
That's not the way to get that. I absolutely. Okay, we're done. Nice. Okay, folks, we're going to bring this one to a close.
No, wait. How to maximize the number who get better? How to maximize the number who get best?
There's a difference. There's a difference between who get best for them. There's a difference between throwing a bunch of people into war to be killed and just giving them general fucking instructions to go off, or taking someone through their entire martial arts career.
Okay, hold on a sec. There are two guys in this podcast who are getting shouted down. So I want to, Lenny, what do you think about this?
I'm just happy to listen to this. What's going on here tomorrow? Because I'm flip flopping backwards and forwards every 2 minutes.
Rick, where are you on all this then?
Oh, I'm just enjoying the conversation between Bob and Mac. But anyway, on the 2 points that Bob made, one, piano teaching. You can still dictate how you teach that student, whether or not you are teaching scales. You can teach the scales by going rote and just saying, repeat it, repeat it, repeat it, repeat it. Or you can say, well, you can say, all right, your wrists are a little tight. You're just doing this. If you try this or you try this, now you're saying, there's one way to teach piano.
No, that's what you said.
And with the privates, in war, hey, any private that wants to remain a private is fine. If you want to excel at what you do, you put the work in and you become, what is it, corporal, sergeant, yada, 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 and then you get up into a Marine or whatever it is.
Who the hell's pounding on their keyboard?
But anyway, there's ways of teaching different people different ways to get the same result.
No, not many.
Okay.
Wait, let me qualify this for a second.
You said there's different ways to teach different people to get the same result. That was, I think, Rick.
To get the same result.
Yeah, I agree, 100%. I live that every week.
Exactly.
To tell you the truth, I'm still formulating what I'm about to say, so please go ahead, Mitch.
Okay, my point is that I think from a safe perspective, I want to be safe. I want to make sure that there's no inappropriate relationships formed and that people are not promoted for the wrong reasons. The strict, I'm the teacher, you're the student, I'll come in, I'll teach you, you do what I say, and that's the end of the relationship. That works best to accomplish that goal. However, if you look at the martial arts from the perspective of not only being good at the martial arts, but trying to make the people who practice it good people, trying to understand how people learn, and I'm sorry, I think the notion that everybody learns the same is insane.
No, I didn't say that, by the way.
Fair enough, I didn't say you did. I'm just saying that that perspective, I don't believe that that's true. I think that the blurred lines perspective allows for more opportunity to reach the people who learn differently. I think that strict, I'm the teacher, you're the student, blah, 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 that leaves a lot of people in its wake because they're not given the opportunity to learn in the way that suits them best. I think the best instructors are the instructors who are able to, at least on a superficial level, understand how to interact with their students in a way that allows them to learn most effectively. And that will give you, at the end of the day, that will give you the greatest number of highly skilled students in a perfect world.
So you have to blur the lines a little. Okay.
Wait, I have to jump in because I'll forget this. Hold on, just 1 second. Mitch just said something about whatever he said, but I can't quote it. But the one thing I was thinking of, when you say blur the lines and you have relationships with people in the club, I don't mean like personal relationships. I just mean you blur the lines where you're going out and stuff like that. And I think we ascertained that there might be a couple examples where that goes astray. But I don't think, in all the years that I've been training, I think there may have been a couple examples, but are few and far between. And I think the complete opposite, where if you have that totally structured thing where there is a complete distance between students and instructors, I think you might lose a couple students that don't like that format. So if you look at the grand scheme of things, it equals out. If you have the relationships, you might lose a couple students. If you have that hardcore thing where there's no relationships, you also might lose a couple students. So you know, which way is the better thing?
It's funny because Bob said something very telling earlier, that he looks at this from a student's perspective. If I look at this from a student's perspective, I want the hardcore, this is this and that's that, and never the twain shall meet. That's how I learn best. But from an instructor's perspective, I can count a dozen or more students who I know for a fact would not have gone as far as they did if that hardcore split was how the club would run. And it, look, there's no easy solution to this. I think that both have their merits. If I had to choose one over the other, and maybe this is the way to end this podcast. If you had to choose one over the other, which would you choose? I think I might actually go fuck myself because I can't decide. Oh,
honest in to God. Dojo, inside the dojo, I agree. I agree.
Hold on, Bob. Hold on. Rick started first.
What the instructor says, I don't care if it's me, you, or a brown belt or a green belt. What the instructor at the time says is what you do. You don't argue, you try it, you do it. But once you get outside the dojo or after you're off the dojo floor, I see no problem with having interpersonal relationships and, you know, and especially with, well, the guys that I've known for a long, long time, going out and having a few drinks. But I mean, even with the kids, you get to know them. You get to know their parents. You get to know what they're doing. You get to know what grade they're in. I think that's all good. But as far as I'm concerned, if you're on the dojo floor, no. What the person that's taking the class says goes, that's what you do. No screw around.
Bob, would it be fair to say that when those external interpersonal relationships interfere with the progression inside the dojo, that's when it becomes a bad thing? Is that fair?
I suppose I am saying that. I just like the mental division.
I do too. Like I said, as a student, I do too.
I'm in love with the idea that the structure is something to aspire to. It's just not something to be played with. And the strictness appeals to me.
I think as students, we all learn differently, obviously. Oh, yeah. But I think at the end of the day, our goals are the same. And I loved this conversation because it brought to the forefront the different perspectives on how we think is best to achieve that goal. How do we get the students to be the best that they can be? There's no easy answer. There's no way to bring this to a conclusion that we can all agree on. Let's just agree that we all do our best, our level best, to bring the best out of our students and end up with the best martial artists we can. I think we all can agree that that's something we want to do. Okay, folks, we're going to end this podcast. I don't know about you guys, but I thought this was a great conversation. Thanks so much, Rick, Darren, Bob, and Len. This was awesome. Like always, folks, comments, questions to my Know Mind Podcast Facebook page, my personal Facebook page, or send an email to knowmindpodcast2021@gmail.com. I think we've wrung the towel about as tight as we can. Every drop of water has been I don't know what the fuck
sweat.
I'm saying anymore.
That's sweat.
Jesus. Thanks, folks. We're done. We're gone. We're out. See you next time. Okay. Now that Bob's 10% dumber.